There's no hard feelings to anybody in this city or anybody in this organization. And I'm glad I'm back.
Isaiah Thomas was back in a familiar place last night, TD Garden, but in an unfamiliar uniform, that of the Cleveland Cavaliers. IT back at TD Garden for the first time since the seismic trade that sent him to the Cavaliers and brought Kyrie Irving to Boston. It's Thursday, January 4th. I'm Chris Gasper, and welcome to Season Ticket. To break down the Celtics' 102-88 victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers and a visiting Isaiah Thomas, who did not play, he watched from the bench, we now bring in Boston Globe senior NBA writer Gary Washburn. Gary, how's it going?
Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Doing very well. Thanks for joining us here on Season Ticket. So the Celtics obviously scored a big win against the Cleveland Cavaliers, their chief competition in the Eastern Conference. As I mentioned, the final score 102-88 last night at TD Garden. But I think the game was overshadowed by Isaiah Thomas's return to Boston, Gary. He had had some hard feelings about the trade. He had said some things on the Players Tribune website about Danny Ainge and how he felt about the way Danny Ainge delivered the news of the trade. But all that seemed to melt away last night when IT came back to Boston.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he ever held any hard feelings toward the city or toward the fan base. And I think he understood how much they appreciated his efforts in 2.5 years. I just think it was a personal situation with Danny. I don't think he felt like Danny communicated with him during the trade situation, you know, and kind of just he didn't feel not only appreciated by Danny, but the communication and the fact that, like, hey, man, explain to me what's going on here. You know, be real with me, you know, because you've already traded away Avery Bradley. You signed Gordon. I'm trying to get my hip right. And all of a sudden you ship me to Cleveland. So I do think he had a legitimate gripe in terms of his issues with Danny Ainge. And now he says they've text messaged and they're okay. You know, and you can, hopefully, you know, this both parties can move forward and we'll see what happens when he comes back February 11th. But I think it was a good night for Isaiah and I think he handled it well.
Do you 100% buy, Gary, the idea, though, that he's over this, that he really doesn't harbor any hard feelings towards Ainge or the Celtics and that he doesn't feel in any way betrayed by them after he was a significant part of their turnaround here? I mean, Al Horford is not on the Boston Celtics if Isaiah Thomas doesn't make the Celtics a desirable destination. Gordon Hayward's not on the Celtics if he's not recruited by Isaiah Thomas. Do you really believe that Isaiah just says, oh, this is water under the bridge, I'm okay that they traded me now?
Well, I think it's there's a couple of layers to that question. One, I think, of course, he wants to drop 50 on the Celtics. I mean, I don't think that's any issue. I mean, I think, of course, he wants to, like, flourish. The next time he comes back here, he wants to beat Boston very badly. But I also think he realizes, Chris, that he's in a good situation in Cleveland. I mean, they didn't trade him to Charlotte. They didn't trade him to Atlanta, okay? They didn't trade him to a team that's just struggling. They traded him to a championship-caliber team that needs him, and he's playing with the best player in the world. So once he embraced, I think, that situation, and I think probably a lot of conversations with LeBron James saying, hey, man, this is something special here. Do you want to be a part of this? I think he kind of renewed his, you know, vigor for the game and also understood that it's a business. You know, I don't think he's completely over it, Chris. I don't think any player is completely over being traded by a team that they loved. I mean, we can go throughout sports and that's pretty much always the case. But I do think that he's made a positive step toward kind of mending fences with Danny. I don't think they'll ever be close again. But I think he's okay with the whole Boston situation.
Yeah, I mean, he did say that, look, I don't have any hard feelings for Danny.
I love Brad Stevens. I love Marcus Smart, even though he flops all the time. I love Terry Rozier. I love the coaching staff. Like I said, there's no hard feelings. Only hard feeling is Danny didn't send me no Christmas card this year. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a cold move. Hey, you know, general managers have to make difficult moves. General managers have to trade players or release players who might be aging, you know, fan favorites. I mean, let's face it, Chris, I mean, Danny Ainge traded Paul Pierce.
Danny Ainge would trade anybody. I think Danny Ainge would trade a member of his family if he thought it would get him closer to an NBA championship.
Yes. He traded Kevin Garnett.
He's not sentimental.
No, he did not offer Ray Allen an extension when Ray Allen wanted one. He traded Avery Bradley. He has traded a lot of the core of this team. And I'm sure it's not easy for him, but it's got to be done. Kyrie was available. Isaiah was injured and also entering the final year of his contract. I think it makes a difference, Chris. If Isaiah gets a max deal somewhere, then I think he'll be happy. And the Boston thing will be just kind of a blip in the screen. He'll appreciate the time he was in Boston. But if he gets, if he doesn't and he's in a bad situation or he's got to turn around and take, a below market contract, he might be a little salty at the situation because playing through injury, because he didn't have surgery early, which probably could have helped. So I think it's a lot of layers to that question. I think he loves the fact that he was loved here. He did great things in the community. He was revered by the fans,
Oh, there's no question he had a great bond with Celtics fans here. Totally. And I think that was a big part of that.
I just think that's something, let's face it, Chris, he started his career in Sacramento, which is not a great NBA town. I mean, they got some nice fans, but the team doesn't win. And then he spent, 40 games, 35 games in Phoenix? So this was the first time in his professional career, he had ever been truly appreciated and loved and also allowed to be himself, given the ball and said, go score, little man. And no, you don't have to play point. We don't want you to have 13 or 14 assists. We want you to score 25, 28 points.
I mean, I love this city. I love this organization. They've given me the opportunity to be who I always wanted to be, and I can't thank them enough. So there's no hard feelings.
I do think, though, he still harbors some hard feelings because this guy put his body on the line for the Celtics. He lost a tooth in that Wizards series. He was in a situation where he was grieving. He lost his sister right before the playoffs, and he still went out and played for the Celtics. And he regarded the Celtics sort of as a surrogate family for him. And you don't trade family members. And look, I think Isaiah got it twisted a little bit. I think he sort of forgot it was a business because the Celtics had given him that opportunity, because they had embraced him so much, because Brad Stevens had given him the keys to the offense, because when you went to TD Garden, you saw Isaiah's face plastered all over the place, basically, because they had made him the focal point of the franchise. And I can see where he would feel the way he would feel. But there's no question he has a unique bond with the Celtics fan base. And I thought you saw that at the end of the first period. Before the start of the second period last night, Isaiah, over there on the bench, the fans recognize him. They give him a standing ovation.
And Thomas just walked out from the Cavs locker room to sit on the bench for the first time. Some of the fans recognize him.
Fashionably late.
I thought that was just a little preview of what it's going to be like February 11th when he does come back again with the Cavaliers. And if he's healthy, he's expected to play in that game. So even though his time here was brief, and I think in some ways Isaiah might exaggerate his place in Celtic history, I do think he's one of those guys that certainly left an impact and an imprint on the Celtics fan base.
I agree, but I also think, I don't think he's exaggerating his impact. I think
Gary, hold on a second here. They're not where they're at right now without him. But the reality is he didn't win a championship here, right?
He didn't, Chris.
He didn't make it to an NBA finals. Like the Celtics, it's a different standard for the Celtics.
I don't think he's overblowing his impact. I think that Boston, though, is a city that everybody still like pats Dave Roberts on the back for one stolen base, or like let Mike Timlin got a key out in game 3 of the division series in 04, and he'll walk in and get a standing O. I mean, Boston remembers athletes who do little things. And Isaiah,
those guys
like,
won championships.
Yeah, but the fact is that he never got a chance. And the fact is he played with a torn hip muscle and through his sister's death. And we got guys in this league like Chandler Parsons who like sits out for like healthy rest because he's, at 27 years old or whatever. And we got Isaiah playing. He didn't miss a game through the death of his sister. I mean, I think that's just so significant. And I don't think people realize that. He literally went home for a minute, then went to the funeral and all that and didn't miss a game. My goodness. When they desperately needed him, in terms of Chicago series, because they would have been eliminated. Chicago, you know, went up 2-0. And if they lose in the first round, I mean, you don't know what happens. Does Hayward come to Boston? All of the above, like the repercussions of them losing the first round of Chicago. I mean, Brad suddenly is not a genius. Al's a disappointment. Like, who knows what happens if they lose that series? It would have been terrible.
No, I generally agree with what you're saying. I completely agree.
I guess my whole with the thing stuff with the sister is like it kind of annoys me that some of the fans are downgrading his accomplishments because they feel like he's a diva. But the fact is that he just wants to do it on his own terms. And then
that's cool, Gary. Yeah, that's totally cool. But here's the thing. Here's the thing I would say about it, though, Gary. Here's the thing I would say, and I'm not knocking Isaiah. I would say, but when he left, remember now, when he talked about the pain of leaving, and in the Players Tribune, he was saying he wanted to carve out a legacy here like Tom Brady or David Ortiz, who are two of the most beloved athletes in the history of Boston sports. One of those guys has 5 championships. The other guy has 3. He wasn't far enough along to be in that category.
He wasn't.
That's my only point. Everything else I agree with. When I saw him on Tuesday night against Portland, even though it was limited, he looked like the same guy to me. So Isaiah Thomas is going to have a lot to say about who comes out of the East this year. There's no question about that. And you can't take that away from him. I don't care who you are. We had, you know, Shaughnessy was on the other day and said he was kind of being diva-ish. I don't agree with that. But no matter who you are, you can't take this guy's skill set and his ability away from him. I just think at times he loses perspective on his place in Boston sports history. And he makes the mistake of making it too personal. Too personal. It's a business. It's a business. I think he was a little naive about that.
I don't think Isaiah's like, yeah, like if there was a party going on with Bill Russell, Bird, McHale, Brady, Ortiz, like, yeah, I'm where's my invite? Like, I'm in, right? Like, no, I don't think that Isaiah feels like he's on that level. I think he wanted to be on that level because he saw how much they were appreciated. But my goodness, let's put him ahead of Curtis Laskanik, or let's put him ahead of, like,
No one's put him behind those guys, Gary. Come on.
let's put him ahead of
that's
guys who, like, like made one play in, you know, the early rounds of a Red Sox playoff run. Let's come on now. I mean, my point is that for a franchise that has been seeking respectability since they broke up the Big Three, okay? And let's face it, Chris, the success of the Celtics from 86 on, I mean, it was painful till 08. So after that, they've tried to get things back. And Cleveland's dominated, and they went to the lottery, and then they lost the first round to Atlanta. So the fact that Isaiah helped invigorate this franchise to where now, for the second year in a row, it's the number one seed in the East. And people don't laugh at Boston anymore. They don't call them an up-and-coming franchise. I think that's on Isaiah's shoulders. And he helped legitimize that. Because let's face it, Chris, in the playoffs, I mean, he was our option. Al wasn't going to drop 30. It was on Isaiah's shoulders. So I guess my point with Isaiah is he is not an all-time great Boston athlete in the pantheon of Brady and Ortiz and Ted Williams. Like, that, he's not getting into that party, okay? That's not happening. But let's put him ahead of some of these guys. When I'm at the Garden, they walk in for a game, you know, they get a big standing O, or let's put him ahead of guys who made one damn play, Chris, one play, you know, in the ALCS, you know, well, got a key out, you know, hey, very nice. This dude scored 53 in the playoffs, Chris, 53.
No, yeah, look, I understand. I totally understand what you're saying. And I think it's just the difference between the Celtics and an organization that hangs banners for one thing and one thing only, championships. And obviously the Red Sox were terrible for so long. So to be able to win that championship in 2004, it left a warm feeling in a lot of people's hearts. But Isaiah obviously still has warm feelings for Boston. I think that's what we learned last night. So he struck a conciliatory tone. And I think it's good for everybody. It's good for Danny Ainge. It's good for IT to sort of move on from this. So that was really the story of last night. That overshadowed the game. IT coming back and not being bitter at the Boston Celtics. All right, we're going to take a brief time out here on Season Ticket. When we come back, more with Gary Washburn. We're going to discuss the state of the Celtics. They're halfway home in this 2017-2018 NBA season. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, we're back now with Boston Globe senior NBA writer Gary Washburn. Gary, I wanted to talk about the state of the Celtics. This was a big win for them, beating the Cavaliers, especially after they lost to them on opening night. Again, the final score, 102-88, was a season low in points for the Cavs. I thought that the Celtics were helped out greatly by the NBA schedule makers, considering that Cleveland was on the second night of a back-to-back. I think it is a sin that the NBA scheduled such a hyped-up match with Cleveland coming off a game the night before. I thought they did a real disservice not only to the Cavaliers, but NBA fans everywhere. But, you know, that aside, let's give the Celtics credit for what they did in this game. When you look at the Celtics, Gary, at 31-10, halfway through the season, do you look at them and say they're the favorites in the East, or do you feel like it's the Cavaliers? Because I feel like it's the Cavaliers because IT's back and Cleveland looks like a deeper team to me.
I think that Cleveland, until you beat them, they're the favorites. When I was in Cleveland, I talked to Jay Crowder. He said the difference between playing in Boston and Cleveland is that Cleveland, they don't take losses. The Cavaliers, the players, don't take losses as hard. I mean, he said when you're the chaser, when you're the pursuer, and you lose, you take those defeats very hard because they're curtailing your, you know, quest to overtake the big guy, the David Goliath thing. Where in Cleveland, they use losses as learning experiences. They weren't broken up last night over losing to the Celtics. Tyronn Lue said, as long as we make the playoffs, we're fine. So if they go in as a 2 or a 3, I don't think they're scared of Toronto. I'm certain of that because they've whipped Toronto. And they're not scared of the Celtics. I think the Cavs are the prohibitive favorites simply because now they have Isaiah Thomas. They still have the best player in the world. I think the Celtics are in a good position. They need a couple. They need something else. But I think anyone would have been giddy, done cartwheels over 31-10, considering what happened opening night.
Yeah, and obviously you're referring to the injury to Gordon Hayward less than 6 minutes into the season and less than 6 minutes into that opener against the Cavaliers. I couldn't agree with you more in the way you just described it. I didn't think this would be where this team would be halfway through, 31-10, second best record in the NBA, best record in the Eastern Conference. Talking about last night's game, you mentioned LeBron James, best player in the world. He had 19 points, but just 3 after the half, hit 7 of his first 8 shots. To me, it struck me as a night, Gary, where LeBron looked at it and said, my teammates don't have it. I think Ty Lue looked at it and said, yeah, the other guys don't have it. We're not going to burn out LeBron here in this game, especially, you know, at one point the Celtics were leading by 23. But it's funny sometimes how the NBA works. Who would have thought in this game that Terry Rozier would end up outscoring LeBron James? Terry Rozier had 20 points in this game. LeBron had 19. And that gets me to this. I think Terry Rozier is really a key guy for the Celtics, Gary. He now has reached double figures in a career-high 5 straight games. He's shooting 60% from the field during that time, averaging 15.6 points per game. They're a different team when Terry Rozier is giving them consistent offense off the bench, because that is the biggest weakness to me of the Celtics. I feel like they are a rotation scorer short, and that weakness is not as damning. It's not as damaging to them if Terry Rozier is going to play like this.
I think the reason they have struggled with some of their losses was the bench, that Brad was forced to put in, use the bench. They didn't score. And then all of a sudden you're asking Kyrie and Al to save the day in the fourth quarter, and they lost some of those games. With Terry, and especially, and also Marcus Smart, let's throw him in there. He had 15 points. If they're hitting shots, you know, if they're hitting those jumpers, if they're hitting threes, they're a very effective team. They won with Kyrie scoring 11 and Al scoring 11. I mean, Kyrie didn't go off. I mean, he missed the makeable shots. He played a below average game, and Al wasn't dominant in the paint. He had a couple of moments. They won because of their bench and because of their defense. And so if you're the Celtics, you hope that Terry and Marcus can continue this, especially Terry. Do you rely on that, though, for another 41 games? That's tough. Okay, that's asking a lot, because Terry has to establish more consistency. So, like you said, I think they're a rotation score short. I don't know what to make of Marcus Morris. He's been up and down since he's been back, and then, you know, he's on his minutes restriction, and you don't know about his knee. But I do think that they have the opportunity to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they are a rotation player short of really competing with the Cavaliers in a seven-game series.
Yeah, and if they get lucky, who knows? Maybe a la IT, Gordon Hayward comes back earlier than expected. I don't think they're banking on that, but it's a possibility, and he could help them out there. But you do see the difference the bench makes. I thought, as you put it, Gary, the bench won that game for them. They got 48 points from the bench, and in the first half, they got 30 points from the bench, which is significant because going into that game, the Celtics ranked 23rd in the NBA in bench scoring, and they were getting an average of 30.9 points per game. They got that in the first half, most of it from Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier, and when you have that kind of depth, it just makes a difference. And what's funny is that was the Celtics' calling card the last couple of seasons. You know, when Isaiah Thomas was here and Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley, they had great depth. That was sort of part of their advantage. And now they certainly have more star power. And I'm going to throw Jason Tatum in there with that. He was fantastic last night. He made an incredible pass to Al Horford in the corner that just, I mean, you know, I was sitting next to Bob Ryan. We both jumped up out of our seats when he made the sort of blind hook pass to Al in the third quarter for a three. But they don't have the depth that Brad Stevens is used to having. And they have to try and establish that somehow, whether it's Hayward coming back, making a move with that disabled player exception, or somebody like Rozier becoming a more consistent scorer.
They've been waiting for Rozier to break out like this because he's had a really troublesome first, I want to say, you know, 34 games where it's been up and down. Then I think he made that big play in Indiana, and maybe that was kind of what got him going, that steal in Indiana and the score. And he's made some stealing scores in some big games. If they could get more out of him and Smart, and you know, Smart's always such a double-edged sword, such a catch-22, because when he gets going, then he knows he's got it going. Then he takes more shots, and then you're, you know, risking him missing five in a row. So I think if they can get those two guys going, Marcus Morris is also a key component. Daniel Tice has also played well. But one player, I mean, one more player would definitely, I mean, I don't know what the Clippers are going to do with Lou Williams, but a guy like that who could just fill it up in a short amount of time, a player who now knows he's in a championship caliber situation and will be fine being kind of a rent-a player and, you know, use his skills to bolster that bench. I think that's the key, because I think their starting five is fine.
Any concern, Gary, about Kyrie Irving and the way he's played against his former team, the Cavaliers? It's been two games now. And not that that's a huge sample size, don't get me wrong, but he's only averaged 16.5 points per game, and the shooting percentage is about 42%. And any concern that sort of LeBron is in his head?
No, I don't think that's it. I think that there's going to be games where Kyrie just doesn't have it. Like, I think the fact is that, you know, there's guys who can do it every night. I'm not saying Kyrie doesn't do it every night, but I think Kyrie is capable of making tremendous plays in the fourth quarter, carrying your team in the fourth quarter. But this, you know, thing that he's going to score 30 a night, like, he's not Isaiah. You know what I'm saying? Isaiah was good for 29 every night because he got to the free throw line. Kyrie doesn't get to the free throw line as often. Kyrie's three-point shooting is streaky, but you always want him taking a big shot because that's his thing. He will flourish down the stretch in the fourth quarter. I think he's fine. I'm not concerned about the sample size against the Cavaliers. I think he'll be ready for the playoffs.
All right. That's Gary Washburn. Great stuff, Gary. Gary Washburn, senior NBA writer for the Boston Globe. You can find Gary on Twitter. His handle is at G Washburn Globe. And Gary, I just have to leave you with this. Dave Roberts didn't just steal a base. He stole our hearts.
Oh, Christ's sake.
Gary, thanks for coming on, man. Always fun to chop it up and talk some NBA with you. Always great for you to come by and drop some knowledge.
Thanks, Chris.
That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend. Leave us a review as well. We'd appreciate that. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.